Welcome to the Hemp Barons podcast, everyone. I'm host Joy Beckerman, and so glad that you're joining me today. We've got a real treat today with Daniel Cruz, who is founder and CEO of Hemp Pro International and Hemp Consult, and is also the president of the board of directors of the European Industrial Hemp Association, a hemp pioneer and hero of basically epic proportions. And I see that we are going to have an election announcement made. I am recording this before that election announcement is made. And I think I know who I want to win. Of course, everyone who's voted knows who they want to win, but I don't know who's going to win. And so I want to take this opportunity to just share my heart with a message about unifying all of us in the United States and across the world, because no matter who wins, it's us together as members of our neighborhoods, members of our community, members of our states and of the United States that comprise what the United States really is about. And it comprises the heart of our country. And I have seen over and over again, overwhelmingly, and they don't make the news. What makes the news is the hate. What makes the news is sensationalism and special interests and manipulation of the public psychology. But what is far more overwhelming are the incredible acts of compassion, of caring, of helping, of healing that take place in our United States, in every town, every day, in tremendous numbers. And they grow exponentially. The world is actually becoming a better place, a healthier place, even as the television screen shows us division and hatred and amplifies and sensationalizes the very worst among us, the darkest hearts among us, who in my own heart can only believe that there are people who are, and I'm not trained in this, guys, I have no psychiatry training at all, so keep that in mind, but I think that people who are filled with hate or who have these biases against other humans with the same red blood flowing through their veins and the same heart within their chest that the hater has, when they hold those folks as lesser humans because of a trait of any kind, whether it's a race, a color, a religion, a sexual orientation, any of those things, I feel like that is a form of mental illness. Again, I don't have any training in that, guys, and I don't want to offend anybody, but in my own heart, the only way that I can even begin to understand that level of harmful ignorance is that the person must suffer, unfortunately, from some form of mental illness. So with that, I want to say that I believe in us. I believe in humanity. I believe in people, and I certainly believe in my fellow citizens in the United States of America. So no matter who wins, guys, we must recognize that we are in charge of our neighborhoods. We are in charge of the people who live to the left and to the right of us. We are in charge of what's going on in our public schools and whether or not there are hungry children there. We're in charge of our communities and making them a better place. There is no magical God or no magical government that is going to come in and take us by the hand and train us how to simply care for our neighbors and make sure that the needs of people who have less than we do, who are less fortunate than us, to make sure that those needs are met. That is what it means to be an American. And there's one thing I'm sure of, guys, no matter what happens here, that we're going to come together and the best of America is going to rise. And together we will heal this nation and make it the greatest nation that it can be. It was actually never fantastically great. We're on our way there and we're on our way together. Thank you for listening, everybody, and stay healthy, celebrate what's happening, celebrate unity, do the deed yourself. It is your own measurement of your own personal integrity that is going to get this done, making our country the best it can be, and we'll talk to you next week. Without further ado, here's the amazing Daniel Cruz. Well, welcome to Hemp Barons, Daniel Cruz. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you, Joy. It's always a pleasure to have you in real life and in the digital world.
I have some of the most fun times and most memorable times with you and with the folks at the European Industrial Hemp Association. Of course, you hail from Germany, but you are an international epic hemp pioneer and advocate. And your work and the body of work that you have created so far and that you are in the midst of a journey on is really tremendous. And I'd like to start as we embark into that body of work. How did you discover hemp? When did hemp come into your life, Daniel?
It's a long story, and I try to make it as short as possible. But I'm actually doing hemp now for 26 years. It was always I always had those feelings as a young man that I wanted to do something to make the world a better place, but I didn't really have any idea how. So I was looking for the how, and then by chance, at that time, the first articles on industrial hemp came across some magazine, and I read that magazine, and I just found for myself that this is the perfect successful combination of ecology and economy. Could provide everything that I was looking for, because I strongly believe that we will definitely not change the world to a better place, a more greener and more sustainable economy, if there is no success, if there is no financial success. We need employment. We need people that actually live from this work that they do, and also if the product itself, the industry, the raw material does not have a certain industrial and economic success, then no one will ever care for it. There will be no companies asking for these products. There will be no politicians taking care that the employment is saved, that the regulation will be changed. I think if you look at the hemp industry today on a worldwide perspective, you can see actually that it is the moment that we achieved what we achieved in the last 25 years altogether, all those hemp pioneers everywhere. And of course, the next generation of the hemp industry, because we are having a voice now and there is success out there. I mean, for me, just to give you an example, completely unbelievable 25 years ago would have been if you would have told me that there are cannabis or industrial hemp companies listed as stock companies. But we already achieved that. I mean, of course, we know all the pitfalls, and also there are always some cowboys on the market, and there always will be some decreases on the stock prices, etc. We all know that because it belongs to the regular business life of all kind of sectors, of all industrial sectors. But we will overcome those challenges, and the industry will learn from the mistakes, and we have to, well, of course, somehow overcome also the regulatory issues that we are facing right now as an industry worldwide. But from there will be the next big wave of success, and if we can prove to the conventional economy that there is a place and there is success with the real sustainable greener economy, especially with the hemp industry, then those companies, those big players, will be aware of what we are doing, and they will start, and that will bring the next step to our industry.
Absolutely. I often say, you know, 30 years ago, I started my journey into hemp in 1990, had a hemp store in New York by 1994, and we couldn't visualized and I imagined really big what the future would hold. But you are so correct that I could never have thought so big as to see the world as it sits today, existing in multiple countries with, as you say, publicly traded companies, beautiful stores, and littered across the United States and throughout the world. It's absolutely amazing. And also, as you say, the getting us to legalization, this last 30-year push, finally brings us to a seat at the table. And now that we have a seat at the table, the real marathon begins, as you well know, and we're constantly working toward more sane laws, more sane regulation at the local, state, national, and international level. And I'm excited to address some international efforts going on now. But before we do that, you have Hemp Pro International and Hemp Consult. Let's talk first about what Hemp Pro International offers in terms of products and maybe some things you might be working on that you could let us peek under the hood for the future.
Well, talking about Hemp Pro International brings us back to where I come from. When I actually started in 1995, about the same time as you, which makes me feel old. I don't understand how you could start it earlier because you're so young. So
love you.
That must
I'm 50. I'm 50. I'll admit it.
Can't say that and can't see it for sure. So anyway, when we started that time, I actually did a retail shop in Old Town of Düsseldorf. So I come from the retail side. Before that, I was a banker and also actually. I was trained to work with numbers, but then I experienced that I need this know-how, and it always helped me to create the business and the back structure of the business. But being a retailer, I started to talk to our central office at that time, which was Hanf House, which means hemp house in English, which was located in Berlin. I got involved in their work in the headquarters. They asked me to come to Berlin to be head of sales. So I got really deeply involved in products in the range of products that we had at that time, which consisted basically from the beginning, as you probably had the same kind of range of products in the US. There was clothing, yeah. Which was a revolution to have a shirt and some jeans and jackets again made from hemp fibers. We had those cosmetics based on hemp seed oil. The first food products came into the shelves, including, of course, all the food products derived from the seeds. We already had extracts, by the way. I'm a witness of that time, and this is something that comes in handy now. When we're talking about this novel food discussion. So we had those hemp extracts, the first, we had the hemp tea from the leaves. And of course, then we had one fantastic, and we still have that, a pure accessory and bag line. And from all these different kind of product ranges, Hanfhaus was the European distributor, the wholesaler, one of the first and the biggest company at that time. Unfortunately, due to a lot of, well, let's say, combination of maybe mismanagement, but also, of course, the challenges of the market itself and the growing company, Hanfhaus had to declare bankruptcy. And with my dear old friend, Raphael, who is again doing hemp business, fortunately, and doing our hemp farm in East Germany, in the eastern part of Germany, he was also working at Hanfhaus at that time, and he was doing the purchasing and especially the food production, while I was on the sales side, and that fit together perfectly. And when Hanfhaus had to declare bankruptcy, we said, okay, we got a lot of issues. We learned from the problems. There are certain things that did not work well. But hemp itself, as a plant, as a raw material, is not the cause of the problem. Yeah. So we actually started Hemp Pro International in that moment, and influenced by the Hanfhaus range. For me, it was clear that I always want to show these products. I always want to show the magnificent possibilities that hemp shows. So I was not able to focus only on food, not only on clothing, not only on cosmetics, but somehow I always try to manage to have the best of the products in those certain segments, in the certain product ranges. Of course, we always had to take care that we do not overextend our financial possibilities or our organizational possibilities by doing too many products in certain areas. But still, as today, Hemp Pro International offers clothing, offers the accessories, offers cosmetics, offers the food products, the ready-to-eat consumer brands. And then the biggest business of HempPro is basically the raw material production of seed and leaf-derived products. This we are doing since 15 years, and in Central Europe, we're the biggest food processor. Meanwhile, you already stated Hemp Consult. I come back to that later. But meanwhile, we got our own factory. We actually also called it Hemp Factory, which is doing those seed-derived products.
And if I could just ask for a moment, so you're dehulling seeds, cold pressing oil, milling seed cake?
Exactly. All those products that Canada and the US became really big about in the last 20 years, let's say. And I have to admit, you know, I learned a lot from my Canadian friends and partners.
So they
are still a couple of years ahead of us. Yeah, I have no problem to admit that and to follow on their path, because with their experience and with their overall not only experience but also volumes that they are doing, and with the market penetration that they already showed. Of course, for us, it's easier in Europe to explain people, and of course also especially the big food companies, the big food customers, how successful this product can be also in Europe in the next time.
Absolutely. And I am proud to be part owner of Colorado Hempworks, which is our first U.S. post-prohibition seed grain processing facility. And yeah, when we've got the supply, those oil presses are running 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. And so much thanks goes to, of course, the folks in Canada who, although Jeff Kostick and Gary Meyer of Hemp Production Services, you know, they're always like, we're happy to share. We're not going to tell you everything, but we're happy to share. And they're so wonderful. And so you've obviously, and I'm sure you, Sean Crew of Hemp Oil Canada, well, you know everybody around the world.
Yeah. Well, those are the guys we started out with at the same time. And they focused on the food, while at the same time, we always tried our best to keep those other part of our assortment, of our product range alive and fill it with the best possible quality. So we didn't even have the chance to focus too much on the food all the time. And also it took us more years, and it still drags on with the THC regulation that we have in Europe. Yeah, I mean, you can just name it. If you have a good, reliable, and also sound scientific regulation on, let's say, only just to name this one topic, is it's THC in food. Canadians had the best situation at all, because Health Canada, although they are also caring about the safety of the consumer, they came up with a 10 ppm for all the raw materials, and that's it. And that was easy, of course, a big advantage for the industry, because that is something you can work with. That is something you can achieve. It's reliable. And you can also, as a producer, control your own product. While in Europe, we have this problem that there's only a recommended guidance values. They are old. They are outdated. They are not scientific at all. They are far below the 10 ppm. And they are always regarding the final product. But what is the final product? Somebody could eat the dehulled seeds, yeah? The hemp seed oil, we got 5 ppm as a recommended guidance value. It's not always achievable, yeah? And we all know that in the hemp market. If we right now, AHA, and we will of course sure talk about AHA a little bit later on, so the European Industrial Hemp Association, we did a great job, I have to tell you this, in this way, by doing contribution on THC in food. Just recently, two weeks ago, thanks to our friend and expert and chemist, Dr. Bernhard Beitzke, and of course my small contribution to it, we put up a paper together for Lorenza, and Lorenza sent it in time to the Commission, because THC in food, the limits, the max max values, the max levels, whatever they want to achieve, whether it's guidance value or limits, is on the table now. But that's like 15, 20, 25 years after the market started. And it's definitely 20 years after the Canadian Health Authority, Health Canada, already established the 10 ppm. Now it's on the table in Europe, and they even want to have max levels below that. So we are telling them, hey guys, first of all, the calculations are wrong that you are showing us, and we are trying to tell them that since years, if not decades. And secondly, we are pointing out to the Canadians and say, hey, there is a health authority in this world, and they already figured this out a long time ago. So why you are coming up with lower levels now? Nobody ever died or had any serious or not even any small harm from digesting, from eating ham food. Nowhere.
And I am constantly singing this 10 ppm song, and I always juxtapose it with, listen, Europe is going for 5 ppm, and we are absolutely not going to settle for that when we don't see any potential for intoxication or harm at 10 ppm. And how it continues to come up, as you well know, I'm preaching to the choir at this point, but the 0.3% Delta-9 THC on a dry weight basis, which is rearing its ugly head right now here in the United States with the DEA's new interim final rule. But the bottom line is, it's not an intelligent way to discuss contaminants or safe levels as in terms of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration as well. And they are already, we have it in writing on one of their websites, they are referring to THC as a contaminant. And if that's the way they're going to treat it, then they're going to have to treat it like all the other contaminants, and there will be a ppm level. And this is a very important conversation.
Yeah, it is. And we are actually even adding something to this argumentation because it's not only to be considered a contaminant, because at least in Europe, by definition, a contaminant is something that comes during the process from the farm to the shelf on the product. Yeah, like by mistake or by some kind of malfunction. Yeah? But the THC itself is part of the plant. So it's inherent, and it belongs to the plant itself, not only by the, let's call it, contamination between the flower and the outer shell of the seed. But there are studies out there that show that even inside the seed, in the kernel, where the young hemp plant will sprout, there is also cannabinoids, because the plant wants to protect its newborn, as a mother would do it. So it belongs to the plant. So it's not so easy by the authorities to call it a contaminant.
No.
They can do it if they want, if they give us the right levels that we can work with. Then I don't care for what kind of name they call it, but they should also understand that it's an inherent constituent of the plant. It belongs to this kind of plant.
Absolutely. As opposed to mercury. So, for example, the fish oil industry, they have to render that mercury inert, or pesticides. Those are all contaminants. But you're absolutely right. They came in from outside of the plant. And it breaks my heart to even begin to categorize any cannabinoid as a contaminant. We'll see as this regulatory framework emerges. And as we know, whatever it is that we start out with, we're going to continue to work every year for more sane laws, more sane regulation. As long as it takes, it could be 100 years.
I hope not.
I would still like to
experience the moment in time that everything is regulated in a sound, scientific, constructive, reasonable way, that our industry loses the stigma of doing anything harmful to the consumer. And that brings me to the answer to answering your question. So coming from Hempro International with this range of products about 10 years ago, we noticed that there was the first, let's call it the first kind of wave of interest, that people from all around the world not only ask the Canadians, not only somewhere, but also came to Europe, came to Germany and asked, how do you do this? Where could I get this? And whatever. So we figured that it is time to have a consulting company, something that, of course, we can not only for billing our hours, which actually we need, because we cannot spend our time of explaining people how it works without getting some financial benefit from it. Otherwise, we would lose the time for doing our own production and processes. But also because we had the special product, hemp extracts. I was in the lucky situation that a couple of years, very short time before the CBD and hemp extract market itself was created in the US, we already did some tests on not only having the leaves for the tea, but also having the leaves or even flowers for some extraction, and tried this and tried that, and we're able to supply right away when the first big players in the US needed the product, especially the market leader, which was our exclusive customer at that time. And so that got us that proof that we need for this special product, as also for special consultations or special requests and consulting, we needed a consulting company. So that's why we founded Hemp Consult. Meanwhile, from those two companies, we figured that we want to prove that next to some exports and next to nice products that we can do, we also want to show that there is a supply chain. And that's why Hanf Farm came into the place. I asked Raphael to get back into the hemp industry because he left the hemp industry for about 10 years in favor of his family with his wife and four kids.
So we know a lot of those stories.
But then I reactivated him, and he was very happy to start hemp farming in a very professional, big scale way. And from the farm, we needed the factory for processing. So then Hemp Factory came on the table. So we started that company. And also at that time, we understood that, okay, there will be a way of treating extracts, tinctures, or whatever as food supplement, as a raw material for cosmetics. Of course, as you know, we are still fighting for the legal framework and the right standards and the right regulations. But we understood that there will be definitely, which was one of the things that I could have never imagined or actually just dreamed about when I was 26 years younger, that there will be cannabis as medicine. So additionally to all those industrial hemp product processes and supply chain management, we started a company called MH Medical Hemp, which is there to supply the cannabis patient with a high percentage THC. A lot of people talk about it. Of course, there's the Canadian cannabis industry. Of course, there will be one in the US. In Europe, there is one. And let's put it this way. A lot of people talk about the cannabis industry in Europe, although it's not really there. It's a very, very stony path to go when it comes to the regulations and when it comes to the actual business from it. We are doing it for 5 years. We are selling a lot of CBD. We are selling a lot of supplement and cosmetics. But to be totally honest, we haven't sold 1 gram of medical cannabis. Yeah? Although we are doing the paperwork since now at least 3.5-4 years. Yeah?
But positioning for it.
Positioning for it and really investing time and money just to get the paperwork ready with authorities. The internal paperwork, all for GMP Pharma, is already since 2 years. But it's all the paperwork with the authorities to actually get it going. Yeah? But anyway, I mean, based on these five companies, at least four of the five companies, we will form a holding next year. It will be called hempholding.eu, and all these companies will be part of the holding. And of course, we also want to prepare for the next wave of interest by investors. We are already starting to plan very conservative, very German, very disciplined, an IPO. It might be our own IPO, it might be some kind of investor package deal, whatever comes down the road. But we want to be prepared for the next big, even bigger wave of interest that will come surely in the next 2 or 3 years.
I mean, Daniel, just thank you. Talk about chopping the wood and carrying the water and really building the infrastructure in every way. And I'm so thrilled to hear, of course, that you're positioning yourself in here in the United States. Folks are rushing to catch up with, of course, GMP good manufacturing practices requirements, which require SOPs, standard operating procedures, for absolutely every step of the way. And it's going to be a wide awakening, I think, to many folks here in the United States who somehow have gotten the idea that since we don't have a CBD or hemp-derived cannabinoid-specific regulatory framework, that they are somehow not obligated to follow the existing laws for those engaged in the manufacture of dietary supplements, food, and cosmetics. And indeed, they are. So just wonderful that you are going to be able to touch all forms of the plant with your caring, regenerative, sustainable, socially and corporate responsible hands and heart and mind. And that brings me to the International Hemp Federation or International Hemp Coalition. I know that the name's changing a little bit, but we had that wonderful sort of inaugural meeting in Calgary last year in November at the Canadian Hemp Trade Alliance Conference. And we were all together in that room, Germany, Holland, China, New Zealand, and India. And I believe Rohit was there. You'll have to remind me if he wasn't. And of course, United States. And I know that that is evolving. Let's talk a little bit about that vision and where we're at.
Yeah, you're completely right. It was a great meeting. It was a great coming together, a starting point. And I think we are on the right way. From my own personal schedule, and I'm sure that you will be on the same page. And I know that Ted from CHDA can't wait to actually now get everything on the table and make it concrete. We should definitely focus on 2021 to get the name decided, to get everything set up. Right now, the internal talks are just, of course, on the whiteboard. But the EIHA, we can supply or bring in on the table an office structure in Brussels, and I think politically, it is a nice place to start out. It could be New York later on. It could be somewhere in the world. Yeah. But politically, I think it makes sense to start from the center of Europe. And Ted, and of course you and the others, we will bring so much experience and so much network from all around the world. Actually, we got everything set up in our minds and in our hearts anyway. And it doesn't really cost that much time now to get it started. The problem is that due to the regulatory issues that we have, that you focus on in the US and that we focus on in Europe, not only the THC in food issue, but then CBD in other food, but not even that, because we already got that covered by the consortium of AHA. Yeah, it will take time, it will cost money, but the plan and the strategy is there. But now, in the middle of the summer, the EU Commission comes up with a single convention. I mean, I can't believe it, but it's on the table. And they actually might consider as a preliminary conclusion that industrial hemp could fall under the scope of the single convention, which, I mean, between us, is completely bullshit. If you read the preamble, and the preamble is by definition by legal definition, the ghost, the meaning of each and every contract. If you read the preamble, it is talking about narcotics and it's talking about illicit production and illicit trafficking. But industrial hemp is neither narcotic nor is there anything illicit about it. So even after the short preamble, which is only half a page, you can actually get this document and put it in the dustbin or in the drawer, because it has nothing to do with our industry. But of course, those bureaucrats, being maybe influenced by other industries or maybe not influenced, we don't know. At least right now, they don't know how to deal with it exactly. We had very good talks with the EU Commission already, Lorenza and me, as an association. And these talks showed me that they actually want to have a solution. They are actually begging for help to guide them the way how to overcome this discussion to a practical solution for the industry. My favorite quote from this teleconference is the lines are open. I mean, it's always nice if officials tell you that the lines are open. We will take it from there, and we will also definitely overcome this obstacle or this challenge. And from there, everything is open. But because for our industry, but because of that, because it's so time consuming, and because we got so many papers to read and to write, and this all this communication, we did not have the time during this summer, and there will be no time until the end of the year to actually do the little bit of administrative steps to form this international association. By the way, I think my personal opinion is it should be called federation, because we got already so many national associations. And a federation gives it a little bit of a new, nice sounding wording. And I also know from Lorenza that the wine industry or other big industries often call the international umbrella a federation, which covers all the associations from all around the world. And we have to check for the right website. We have to check for the right short form. Then the big decision will be, is it on hemp? Is it industrial hemp by definition, or is it industrial hemp and cannabis? So this is what we have to come together with. Things can change. We can start as hemp and we can take cannabis on later on. But we should think about it. We should discuss. We should brainstorm. From my side, I'm very positive, and I will have another meeting this week with Lorenzo inter alia on this topic. I will definitely have more emails and chats with Ted during the next weeks. I think we will be prepared to have a first-to-go structure in the first quarter of next year. Because I believe that the whole industry worldwide needs this kind of signal. And the industry, including or not including the cannabis, and I'm personally think it should be including the cannabis as a whole very soon. If not in the beginning, very soon. We need to sit on the table with WHO. We need to sit on the table with UN. Yeah? We would be so much stronger and so much more efficient if we talk with these organizations face to face than if we have to go through the national authorities that do not understand everything that already happened by WHO and by the UN.
Absolutely. And I did a three-part series on, and so the listeners know, when we're talking about the convention here, we're talking about the 1961 Single Convention on Narcotics through the United Nations. It's a treaty that many, many countries have signed on to. Basically, it's the Controlled Substances Act of the planet, for those that have signed on. And industrial hemp is certainly not within that scope, yet it is constantly being placed there. So we did a three-part series with Kenzie and Michael Kravitz. And in terms of this, and also for the listeners to know, when we talk about the EU Commission, we're talking about the European Commission here and how they are dealing with categorizing hemp-derived cannabidiol as a narcotic, just absolutely outrageous. Now, with regard to this position of this archaic, way non-scientific position that is being threatened at the global level, and by the way, for the listeners, Brussels being much closer to Geneva and Vienna, where these World Health Organization Expert Commission on Drug Dependency convergences take place, you know, Michael said this is most likely that will just backfire. It's almost like, as to quote Michael Kravitz, playing into our hands that they're wanting to go backwards here.
Yeah, I mean, you can have my most favorite quote that I'm using right now. In the 1970s, the EEC Council, which is now the European Commission, basically in our days, finally recognized industrial hemp as a crop, and even subsidized its cultivation by tax money. In 1997, the EU Commission confirmed that food from any part of the hemp plant was not novel. in
your vice president Catherine Wilson just explained all of this to us. I mean, it is really it's the dying voices of dinosaurs is kind of the way I describe this concept when it rears its head.
And it's unbelievable that now, 20, 25 years later, as you said, those dinosaur bones get digged out and somebody tells us, hey, it's all other way around. The Earth is still flat. I mean, this comes basically to the same situation.
And the position statement, of course, that was put forth by AHA and a whole coalition, and I certainly understand that. I also understand that the European Industrial Hemp Association absolutely took the lion's share of the laboring oar, and what an accomplishment. And I know that that was just recently submitted.
It was the perfect time, yeah. Fortunately, I had enough time in the last years to dig into the topic of single convention. Because it came across my path in the industry several times. So I was prepared already for this topic in case it comes up. And Lorenza is very clever and very fast in learning. And already 2 years ago, she understood very well what are going to be our challenges, maybe or certainly. The single convention actually was on my maybe list because I didn't really actually think that somebody would come up with this topic seriously. But they did. So we already had our position, AHA position in 2019. And from there, together with our experts like Ken C, that you know, and of course, Dr. Beiske again, etc., it was quite easy together with the international associations and of course, a lot of help from TED, from CHTA to create the common position for all associations. And now coming back to the umbrella. We need the Federation to give it even a stronger voice. And as you said, to meet those authorities, those worldwide authorities like WHO and UN face to face directly where they are located. That will make a difference.
And that process alone, as I'm sure you know, can be a 12 to 18 to 24 month process, depending on when you put the application in to sort of get that charter. But well on our way and constantly working. So, man, did AHA, as usual, do some outstanding work and continuing to do that in 2020. And I couldn't be more excited to get the International Hemp Federation underway. And I'm just so grateful for everyone's leadership in that respect. AHA is just such a lightning rod for all of us throughout the world in delivering on the promise of this plant. Daniel, before we go in our remaining time, is there any particular message that you want to make sure you send out or something I may not have asked you that you want to make sure the listeners know?
As I figured before, you actually mentioned everything that is on the table right now. So I don't think that we missed any particular or any important topic. You already summarized it perfectly. I think we are on the right way. We are a professional industry everywhere in the world, from China, Australia, all the way back to the US and Canada, including good old Europe. And now it's up to us to overcome those three main obstacles, THC in food everywhere in the world, including US and Europe, where we can help each other a lot. We have to stick to our plan to give the authorities what they want. If they call it novel food, well, let's let them call it novel food. Let's do our tox studies and we will prove them that the products are safe. That's easy. It takes money, it takes time, but we will accomplish it. And let's stick together to show all of the authorities in the world that we are not in the scope of the single convention and that industrial hemp has nothing to do with the illicit narcotic product anywhere.
Boy, you took my summary and wrapped it in a beautiful bow, brother, as you often do. Thank you so very much for being with us today, Daniel. Thank you for everything that you do for hemp, for all forms of cannabis in Europe, in Germany, throughout the world. And I can't wait to have you back again, brother. Stay healthy. And man, when we can gather safely again, what a big hug I'm going to give you. Thank you again for being with us on Hemp Barons.
Well, thank you, Joy. Big hello to everyone in the world from Düsseldorf in Germany. Stay healthy, everyone. And let's meet together in live in 2020 again.
You better believe it. You better believe it, brother. Thank you, Daniel.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
Cannabis Health Radio is a podcast about stories from people around the world who have used cannabis to deal with serious ailments, many of them life-threatening. My name is Ian Jessup. My co-host Corey Yelland is no stranger to the devastating emotional impact faced by so many people receiving a death sentence diagnosis from a doctor. Told she only had months to live with anal canal cancer, Corey researched and immediately began using cannabis oil to eliminate her cancer and has been cancer-free for more than a decade. She told herself that if it worked, she would spend the rest of her life helping others, which she does tirelessly every day. When you listen to our podcast, you'll hear many stories like Corey's, along with others who have used cannabis oil for many more ailments besides cancer, such as chronic pain, PTSD, MS, and many, many more. As one of our guests said, "Your podcast gave me the confidence to save my own life." We regularly get messages from listeners who have heard our podcast and use cannabis to solve a serious health issue of their own or that of a loved one. We hope you listen to these stories and be as inspired and moved as we are with each and every episode.